for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The state of California requires applicants to go online for unemployment benefits. More and more retailers require online applications instead of in-person paper copies. But not everyone has a computer or is computer literate. When the economy sours, people often turn to local libraries for help. Joining me in the studio to talk about the services libraries provide and how they can help struggling communities and individuals, Dr. Carla Hayden. She's executive director of the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore. Jenny Cooper, she's chief librarian for the District of Columbia, and Jim Rettig, he's president of the American Library Association. Throughout the hour, I know many of you who care about libraries will join us. Call us with your questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning and Happy New Year to all of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Jim Rettig, let me ask you to generally outline for us the role that libraries play in communities across the country.
Well, every public library tailors its services to the needs of its community. And as the economy has gone down, we see some of these services that aren't new but are getting much greater use. Access to the internet, for the reasons you just cited, is one of those things. Workshops on resume preparation are very popular. Even some libraries are doing workshops on if you're facing foreclosure, what you can do. Basic computer instruction has also become important as people who didn't need to use a computer have discovered they have to. And some of that instruction is as fundamental as how to manipulate a mouse.
I would think that also as movies, for example, become more and more expensive, that families might turn to libraries for other kinds of entertainment.
A lot of people have discovered the value of their public library and that library card. It's a lot cheaper to borrow a book than to buy one, a lot cheaper to borrow a DVD than to buy one.
Jim Rettig, he's president of the American Library Association. He's also the university librarian at the Boatwright Memorial Library at the University of Richmond, Virginia. Carla Hayden, what's the number one challenge facing the Enoch Pratt Library today?
I think our number one challenge is similar to other public libraries, and that's to balance the increase in demand now. People are rediscovering their libraries. They're coming to us for all types of information, and as we just heard, entertainment and alternatives. But our budgets are, of course, severely damaged, I would say, in a way, because the economy has really impacted localities, and that's where we get most of our funding from, our local governments. And so the libraries are facing, and that's our challenge, and other public libraries throughout the country, the challenge of keeping up with the demand with shrinking budgets.
Can you give me specifics on your own shrinking budget, a comparison perhaps?
Yes.
Last year and this year?
We've already had to cut our budget from about $41 million down to about $38 to $36 million. And that directly impacts things such as how often we're open to the public. With people needing to use our computers, we're the only access point in the city for many, many people. And so if you don't have the hours open and they don't have computers at home, you're cutting off the direct line.
Carla Hayden is executive director of the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, Maryland. She is the past president of the American Library Association. And Jenny Cooper here in Washington, D.C., I would presume you're facing the same kinds of challenges.
Yes, exactly. And both Jim and Carla have described well the situation that so many of us deal with. More people want to use their libraries now. We see more people coming to story times with their children. We see more people coming to library programs for entertainment and for information that they want to learn.
Have you seen this same kind of situation happened before? In the economic downturn, sort of library usage goes up.
Absolutely. In fact, it's frightening to see it confirmed once again that at times of economic trouble, people do turn to their libraries, and they turn to their libraries exactly at the time when our own ability to provide the services they need is cut as tax revenues decrease.
So are you seeing the same kinds of budget cutbacks that Carla talked about?
What we're mostly doing now is worrying a little bit about next year. We have a number of new buildings that will open next year. We know that everybody in a decision-making level, the city council and the mayor, want us to be successful in opening those libraries. And we want to make sure that we can continue to be open every day of every week, as is the case right now.
I would think that that would take a great deal of lobbying on your part.
Well, certainly. Library advocates talk about it with those important people on a regular basis. I do, too. The most largest single expenditure for libraries is people. And most of the people that we employ serve the public directly. You know, they're not managers. They're not sitting behind a desk. They're checking out books. They're helping people find what they want. They're making sure the right books are on the shelves at the right times. And that's what we need to keep our doors open, and it's a heavy cost.
Jenny Cooper is chief librarian for the District of Columbia. She's the former executive director of the Brooklyn Public Library. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Jim Rettig, how do libraries serve as financial advisors?
They have lots of resources that anybody can help themselves to, books, videos, things of that sort that provide information about personal finance. They also bring in experts to conduct workshops and lessons so that people can learn about these things. The Richmond Public Library recently had a session on how to start your own business, and it was subscribed completely within a day.
Now, do you expect, with the incoming administration and cutbacks across the board, that libraries across the country are going to suffer and indeed either have to lay off personnel or, worst case, close?
Well, what we hope with the new administration is that the big economic stimulus bill that it keeps discussing will include some provision for libraries and library services. Libraries do make an economic contribution to their communities, and we want to do our part in bringing the economy back on its feet.
Carla?
Well, one of the major parts that libraries are able to do is help with community and economic development, and investing in libraries would be a wise investment for workforce development. And we have a job and career center that is just packed. We had a 92% increase in the workshops on how to get a job, how to do a resume, networking, and bringing in those types of resources. People are the increase in terms of the use of our databases, and most libraries have extensive online databases that will provide you with any type of up-to-date information, and that increases in the hundreds of percent.
Give me a timeline when all this began to change. As I was a girl growing up here in Washington, D.C., you know, you saw kids, some adults, but mostly kids using libraries, using the reference libraries, using the stacks for homework. But this kind of activity with workshops and the like, give me a timeline.
Well, I think that we still think of children as our most important audience, and we're here to make sure that the kids in the district succeed in school and that their time is well spent out of school. We employ close to 100 teenagers, for example, at the library. And after school, any of our libraries, particularly the neighborhood libraries, are going to be jammed with kids. doing things that are better for them to do than what they might otherwise choose to do. But really, libraries have seen the importance of both internet access and access to computers and computer instruction and programs in the last 20 years or so. I've been a librarian for a good long while, and I've come to understand that if you don't check out a book at the library, you're still using the library if you're coming to celebrate Chinese New Year, as we did with several hundred in Brooklyn on a regular basis, or to hear good speakers, as happened just last night at our library at Martin Luther King Memorial Library.
We had an example of that just recently. We had a Saturday morning showing of the documentary about Harvey Milk. And at 10 o'clock in the morning, we had over 250 people, and we did an informal survey and said, raise your hand if you've seen the film Milk. And more than half of the people had seen the film, and then they wanted to see the documentary. But 250 people on a rainy Saturday morning, free showing of a documentary.
That's really incredible. And they knew about it because you were able to publicize it. How?
Well, we have a newsletter, and we do quite a bit online on our website, as well as actually bus placards on the sides of buses through the city saying, check us out, and your journey starts here.
Carla Hayden, Executive Director of the Enoch Pratt Free Library in Baltimore, Maryland. When we come back, we'll talk further and take your calls, questions, comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Welcome back. Here is our first email from Susan. She's in Erlanger, Kentucky. She says, as Carla Hayden points out, as important as public libraries are to communities in hard economic times, library funding is frequently seen as expendable by those making decisions about cutting public funds. It's absolutely imperative that the users of those libraries loudly and clearly defend their library's physical health to their local, regional, and state governments. Librarians can advocate till they're blue in the face, but we're not the ones our budget commissions need to hear from. It's the people who benefit from our work and help who need to rise up to protect their interests and their libraries.
That
Carla.
Is so right.
Isn't
and
that
she
good?
Said it exactly
yeah.
correct.
And the legislators really listen to users. And when you have people saying that we want, of course, public safety and we want our streets clean, but we also want preventive types of measures, too, and to put money into making sure the communities are whole. And that really resonates with with legislators.
Jim?
Well, library users who want to advocate for their libraries, and they are the most effective voices, can go to ALA.org, click on the advocacy button, and find all kinds of helpful resources if they're not familiar with how to do this.
All right. Well, here is a wonderful potential resource for all of you. It's from Carolina, who says, libraries have always been so important in my life. I would love to put my local library in my will. Is it possible to do this, or does any money donated to the library end up being deducted from its annual budget? Carla?
No, libraries have really tried to establish foundations. They use Friends of the Libraries to make sure that the donations are not deducted. And most of the donations are used for the things that aren't just keeping the doors open. So if, say, for the children's room needs a special computer setup or things like that, that are one time only usually and significant in that sense. And so that planned giving is very important.
How often does that happen, Jenny?
Not nearly as often as I'd like it to, Diane. And Carla has said it exactly as is the case. Almost every library has found a way for people to remember the library, whether it's in their will or an annual gift or giving in some other way. And what we always say is, you know, at libraries, the lights are already on. In most cases, the staff is already present. So what people can give to is those items that make a good library a great library, the way to really make a difference. And I hope many people will take that opportunity in D.C. and other places, too.
How much money does the federal government give to public libraries, Jim?
Library funding from the federal government accounts for less than one-half of 1% of all library expenditures nationwide. I can't off the top of my head give you a dollar figure, but it's modest, and there are opportunities for growth there.
I would certainly assume so.
From what I understand, the Library Services and Technology Act, that's our major federal funding stream, is only about $200 million. And when you think about that for the entire country, that's really not enough. And those monies are used for internet connections and special programs, but it's certainly not enough to operate any libraries. It really are targeted for projects and special funding.
What's the annual budget for the D.C. Public Library?
The D.C. Public Library is about $45 million, and our federal money is about $800,000, I believe. So really, right. Jim's right when he says about a half of 1%.
Right.
And it's important money. We can target it and do with a plan for very specific work that needs to be done. We spend a good deal of ours on adult literacy, an important issue in the district and in many other places, and for some other very special programs at our library and at some others throughout the district, too.
There are libraries around the country being closed down, two in Milwaukee, for example, or they're at least considering closing two of their 12 branches. In Clearwater, Florida, libraries will now be closed on Friday and Saturday, the two busiest days at the library, and the Trenton Public Library will close its four branches and lose about half of its 57 employees. Is that because there is insufficient local funding, Jim?
Yes, but it also indicates insufficient local support for the library. And again, those advocates need to speak up for the libraries if they want to keep them as an integral part of their communities.
What is it that happens? People begin, at the same time the need becomes greater, they forget that resource is there and don't speak out for it?
Well, I think most of the, and unfortunately Baltimore had a series of closures several years ago, and what we found was that people did not realize that the library was in danger. And that the library wouldn't always be there. As Jenny said, the lights are on, you see the buildings, and you think that libraries don't really need the funding, and you don't hear about that. And sometimes I think librarians, and I think we can all speak to that. Sometimes we're too quiet about the whole matter. And we need to have that support to have people say the library is important.
But how do you respond when people say there are other urgent needs, like food, like basic housing and clothing and shelter, Jenny?
It is a challenge. I absolutely understand that. And the people that make that decision are weighing the emergency need of today with the long-term value of something like the library that in so many ways is that base that you need to have for the for now and for the future. So I don't think there's a magic answer. And I don't think that anybody who makes those decisions does it because they're hard-hearted about what libraries are and the value of the libraries. Very difficult issues. I just hope that on the federal level and for all of us on our individual local levels, we are finding people who will speak of the library and understand that value and articulate it and make sure that it is a part of the mix and a part of what's being considered.
You came from the Brooklyn Public Library. How have you managed to increase usage of the libraries here in Washington?
Well, thankfully, we've not had to rely completely in the last 2.5 years on an economic downturn to do that for us, although we are seeing even greater increases. In the District of Columbia, what we are finding is if you give people the material that they want, some of it in print, some of it online, computer access that they need, and programs that they care about in buildings that are clean, safe, well-lit, and staffed by people who are there to help you. And we are able to do all of that with the wonderful help and support of the staff of the DC Public Library. They will use their libraries. Using the measure of how many books get checked out, our use has increased by 22% each of the last 2 years. This year, by books checked out, not even audiovisual items, we're on target to be at about 28% more. Audiovisual items about double. Those
and
DVDs.
Why do you think that is?
I think we're getting people what they want. And when they have a successful use of the library, they come back and use it again. And I think that's really what we are all able to do. So, for example, when you can go on the library's website and find a sample test for a civil service exam or a GED exam, you think, I wonder what else that library has that I might want and find out.
And when you provide the urban fiction that so many young people want and you see them on the buses and you see them reading in the malls, that's the kind of thing that we have to make sure that we provide as well.
At the same time, you have activities that you encourage and some activities you discourage. Jenny, you've outlawed sleeping in libraries at night.
Not at night. I mean, what we recognize is that that's not why we're there. The library doesn't exist to provide a place for people
who are
to nap or others. I mean, I don't know when I see somebody in our library whether they're a customer with a home or a customer without a home. You don't wear a label. But in general, we're there for the kinds of activities that we are funded to provide.
So if you see, or one of the librarians sees, a person sleeping head down on the table, what happens?
We gently awaken them.
Right. Is that sort of a rule around the country, Jim, or how do you handle that?
Well, I'm in an academic library, and we're open 24 hours a day for our students, and so we see it frequently. We don't allow them to bring the pillow and blanket in at camp, though.
And we see it, especially at our central library in Baltimore. We were right across from a shelter-type situation, and we definitely had issues at first, but then we found that the computer use and actually engaging some of the people that were in there and letting them see what we had. Now when you go in, you don't see as many people at the tables dozing off. You see them at the computer terminals.
There was an issue, Carla Hayden, that came up, the Patriot Act of 2001. Your reaction?
Well, I was actually very involved when that happened because the American Library Association that Jim's now heading really took a major stand about the public's right to know. And basically what happened was that there was a disconnect between people being interested in topics. If you wanted to know about the jihad, if you just wanted to know, that doesn't mean that you want to join or that you had intent. And so interest and intent were confused with that legislation. And so we were very adamant that the public should be able to ask and look for any information they want without being examined. And
their librarians asked or examined.
Well, what the act at first did was say that you couldn't even tell a patron that the federal government was investigating what you were looking into, and that if we did that as librarians, we were subject to arrest, basically.
Did you have any of those issues either in Brooklyn or here in Washington?
Yes, all of us in public libraries dealt with it either in actual fact, as I did several times, or in theory. Because to carry it even one step further, if I had that problem, if the federal government were looking at what people did in a library with where I worked, I had to limit the number of people that even knew that issue existed. Not only could I not tell the patron, by the way, your record's being requested, but I wasn't to tell my colleagues, other librarians, others.
How did you handle that?
Well, as the American Library Association, with Carla as president at that time, many others of us involved did, was make sure the public was aware of exactly the situation we were in.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now, let's open the phones and go first to Middleway, West Virginia. Good morning, Frank. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane, and thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
And thank you for all the wonderful programs you provide.
I'm glad.
I'd like to ask the panel, what is the current legal status for government agents to be able to come into a library and demand to see a patron's history of books they check out, videos they check out, and even websites that they go on? I know when I go into my public library, I have to show my library card to use the computer and sign in. So what is the current legal status?
Jim Reddick.
These issues have taken a long way to percolate through the system, and there are federal court cases that are currently underway or under appeal that will help clarify just what the government's privileges are and what the individual's rights and what the due process needs to be.
I'll tell you one way that individual libraries have been dealing with that issue is to make sure we don't keep information that we aren't going to need for the long term. So that if you go into one of our libraries and you do sign on with your library card, which we require, once you're done, it's done. We don't know what you looked at. It's purged from the computer. We don't know who used it. And that's because we don't need that information.
And most libraries take that information just for their own security at the moment. It's just a way. It's similar to using a library card, and it's just to hold something possibly valuable that the person has so that you will come back or you would use it. So we don't need those records, and you can't subpoena or give up records that you don't have.
All right. To Tempe, Arizona. Good morning, Marion. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to join you.
Indeed.
I just wanted to tell you, I'm the daughter of a former reference librarian. My mom's now deceased, but my linkage with libraries goes way, way back, and I was laughing about the fact that my mom would just be somewhat startled if she walked into my local Tempe library, because we now have a coffee shop in there, which actually helps to fund some of the extra programs.
Huh.
It's one of the ways they have dealt with the need to have evening classes for patrons. And I think she'd be delighted to know it's there, but aside from that, it is a little startling sometimes to go in. But our local library is heavily used. Sometimes it's hard to find a parking place. And I go in, and there's all ages there. There's everything from the little kids in the reading groups right on up through those of us who are using canes and walkers. And so I think the libraries meet a need. I think we do need to make sure our local elected officials know how much that need is met, but I'd like to see us extend our viewpoint and maybe think about, we have post office facilities in odd places like malls and things. I think perhaps we ought to think about doing some library services, maybe computer terminals and things like that in places like malls.
That's interesting. First of all, how common are coffee shops in libraries around the country, Jim?
Not quite as common as libraries around the country, but getting close. Libraries are learning places. They stimulate the brain. So does caffeine, and they go together well sometimes.
I think that's terrific. I gather that means they also serve some kind of food.
Yes, that's often right. The case. When I was in Portland, Oregon, we actually had a Starbucks outlet in our central library. And it's true. You know, you go into bookstores now. It's wonderful. Bookstores learn from libraries, and libraries learn from bookstores. They're available there, too.
And we're learning a great deal this morning about libraries across the country. We'll take just a short break and invite more of your calls when we come back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the German Embassy, presenting Germany Info, a web publication with daily news from Germany, business and investment information, and suggestions for travel to Europe on the web at germany.info. By the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at hewlett.org. And by the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Could Bush administration officials be prosecuted for torture? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Philippe Sands, international law expert and author of the book Torture Team. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And welcome back. We're talking about libraries across the country, how they help in times of economic downturns. But we must not forget the librarians. Here's an email from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Suzanne says, I wonder if the panel would talk about the importance of degreed professional librarians to library quality of service. Another points out that many librarians are close to retirement, mm-hmm. and who will replace them? Jenny?
Yes, that indeed, in both cases, you're exactly right on, and I'm so pleased to have an opportunity to address it. Librarians do have special skills, and I think it's very important that they be allowed to exercise those skills. I have a number of librarians that I know personally who feel like they're they're being asked to do work that somebody else could do and would very much like the opportunity to use those selection skills, those instruction skills, the opportunity to work with young children to make sure the right material is there for the right person at whatever age. That's really critical. And all of us worry about that issue of who's going to replace us. As a matter of fact, when I mentioned earlier, we employ about almost 100 teens in Washington, D.C., and when I meet with the young people that we hire, I always say, you know, you should be a librarian now. And in fact, the very first class, I promised I would make a personal contribution of some level to their graduate education if they chose to be librarians.
Oh, wonderful.
That's
for
right.
You.
I'm sure that they and their parents will be coming back to me.
And here's an email from Linda with a contrarian view. Don't libraries compete with profit bookstores, etc., that meet many of these needs, including some small businesses that we need to support? Why should government pay so much money in these times for libraries? Carla.
We've had that discussion in the library community for a number of years as we've added different types of media, for instance, videotapes. There was a big controversy about that. And what has fallen out about that is that people in the communities need choices, and some people are able to purchase a bestseller for $22.95, and other people aren't. And so the idea of having a community of readers, a community of people who are involved in educational and cultural activities, and leveling the playing field is where the public libraries come in. And so that it's not taking away. In fact, people are using everything more. I personally go to bookstores and buy books. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you're taking
one
from
way
one
or
to get
the other. All right, to Westtown, New York. Sandra, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Well, I just wanted to call in because I live in a community where we don't even have library access. Hello?
Yep.
Yes, we're stunned.
We're sitting right here waiting.
Oh, yes. Hello?
Yes. Go right ahead.
Okay. I live in a community where we don't have libraries.
Yes.
And I actually go to the next state over and pay $25 a year to go to the library.
Sandra, how did that happen? Tell me about your community.
Well, you know, it happened before we moved here. I think it's a funding issue. I think the local, our town and the local libraries had some type of funding dispute, and our town decided that they didn't want to pay the money, so there's no library access.
That's fascinating. Jim?
I was devastated when we first moved here.
Well, I would think so. Jim?
That's not an isolated case, unfortunately. Sometimes a rich community relative to the community next door has a strong library, and the government in that less wealthy community will set up a contractual relationship to provide library services for its citizens. Those get renewed sometimes. Sometimes they don't. There's some falling out, or you know, the community that has paid for the library service decides to cut that in their budget.
But she's got to pay $25 every time she goes. Or a $25 membership fee, is that it?
For a year, I live in New York, but I'm right next to New Jersey, and I go to New Jersey.
I see.
To that library, and I mean, we've been really happy. I mean, they call me their best customer because I'm there two or three times a week.
Oh, I see.
I go to the preschool program. I have three other children who are in school. I go to workshops at the library, and, you know, I'm very happy going. I just feel really bad for the people who live around me.
And who cannot make that kind of trip, Jenny.
In reality, the people who live in that local community where the library exists are probably paying more than $25 in their local taxes for the library. I think the first thing that Jim said in our hour together was libraries are locally funded. And this is a great example. If this woman and her neighbors can make sure that the elected officials who make the decisions about how their money will be spent know that the library matters to them, this situation and others like it can be reversed.
I hope so. Let's follow that up with a question from Mitchell in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Good morning to you, Mitchell.
Good morning, Diane. It's so nice to talk to you, and I'm very glad you're tackling this subject. My mother has been a librarian in the Montgomery County library system for over 30 years, so libraries are very near and dear to my heart. My question is, does the ALA have, in Washington, D.C., lobbyists or advocates in place to try and get the funding in the Obama economic stimulus package that was spoken of before?
Jan.
We do indeed. We have an entire Washington office. Our headquarters are in Chicago, but it's very important that we maintain that strong presence here in the Capitol. Not only are we working for the future, but we've been working with the Obama transition team to let them know what libraries and citizens need in the new administration.
And what has been the reaction so far?
Well, as you know, the Obama administration's being very careful about what it says. We are optimistic that the stimulus package will include some provision for libraries, and we've provided an entire agenda of important issues, including copyright, broadband access, especially in rural areas, and more that we hope that they will work on.
All right, and now to Northport, New York. Good morning, Karen.
Hi. I love your show, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
I worked as a circulation clerk in a library for many years, and the thing that people don't acknowledge all the time is that you also have to be a pretty skilled social worker. You deal with, in our library, we dealt with elderly people, handicapped people, people who were mentally ill. I remember once a teenager came in and he said, "I need to go to the hospital," and he was very disoriented, I don't know what from, and I, you know, left the desk, covered, by the way, and went to help him, and we got arranged for the police to come pick him up with his permission. You deal with stuff like that all the time, and nobody talks about that. It's the first line of defense because people feel safe going to the library.
That's so interesting, Karen Ginny.
That is exactly right, and I'm so glad that this caller has made that point. We are the public's library, and we see every part of the public on a regular basis. And library staff are amazingly skilled and, if I might, mission-driven. You know, they do that work because they love dealing with people and knowing that they make a difference in their lives every day.
Here's an email from Cricket who says, "What services do they offer folks who come in needing to use the internet but who do not know how? Will the library assist them on the spot, or will the patron need to make time to go to a class on the library's schedule?" Carla?
It's actually a combination of both. If the person needs information from a database or using the computer, the staff members will help them right then and instruct them and even stand with them and show them how to get the information or get it for them. They would then probably let them know about computer classes, free computer classes that start with here's a mouse and here's how a computer works as well. So you can get the information you need right away, but you can also find out about how you can do something at another time when you have time for instruction.
And Jenny, I gather you've begun a tutoring program for students.
Yes, that's right. We do a number of things to make sure that kids are able to succeed in school. Some of them are one-on-one tutoring. Some is opportunities online that a number of libraries also offer. There's a program that will connect you with a teacher somewhere in North America and almost immediately help a fourth grader with a math problem, a seventh grader with a sentence structure problem, or my favorite, a junior in high school with an advanced physics problem that I couldn't help them with.
Tutor.com.
And Jim, one of our caller, wants to know about the future of bookmobiles.
That's a very good question. Some communities have phased them out last year because of the fuel prices. Others, that's the only way to reach members in their communities in rural areas, and there the bookmobile is alive and well and incredibly important.
And it's actually a cybermobile now. Most of them have wireless capabilities. We're getting a new cybermobile that will go into communities. And Memphis Shelby has a job link mobile that goes into communities and helps people get jobs and get online and fill out applications right in the community.
Huh. And to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Good morning, Kim.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
I love your show. I'm a faithful listener.
Thank you.
I have to put in a plug for our Ann Arbor libraries here. We have a phenomenal system in our family. Since we've moved here 8 years ago, we get books, CDs, DVDs. We've gotten travel books. When we go to a certain country, instead of spending, you know, $50, $75 on travel books, we just go to our library, get the books, you know, Xerox what we need, look at what we want in the books, and then return them when we get back. And what's great about our libraries is the programming that we have. We have, you know, a celebration of the Chinese New Year. We have local playwrights that come and talk. We have authors that come and talk about their books, and there's book signings. There's so much to a library besides books. And I just think it's, even in our hard times now and not so hard times, our library is a great source of information, and it's also a good green way to go.
Hmm.
So I needed to put in that plug about our Ann Arbor library.
Well, and I hope you're doing that in other ways as well, not only supporting the library in your own community, but speaking out to the local officials in that community that they know how much you value that service. Thanks.
Absolutely. And I tell people, all, you know, our council people, you know, how fabulous our libraries are. And that's something that we really need to make sure that they stay alive.
Indeed. Thanks so much for calling, Kim. And let's go to Wichita, Kansas. Good morning, Charlie. At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show.
And you're talking about my favorite topic, and I hope you bring this subject back several times this year.
Thanks, Charlie.
I've done everything with my public library as a volunteer, from being on the Friends of the Library Board to being on the Library Board. But my favorite thing is, last September, we celebrated 17 years of our used bookstore. Now, people donate to this. You know, when Mama goes to the nursing home and they close out the house, and we get boxes and boxes of stuff, and, you know, for various reasons. But people donate to that. We sort it in a designated area, put it in storage for sales, or put it into the store. And out of 250 square feet of space off the lobby, we have consistently made between $40,000 and $50,000 a year that goes to the library.
It's wonderful.
At very low prices. And we have all volunteer help. And this has been going on. We used to have a book sale that maybe we'd have once a year, and it would make maybe $6,000, $8,000, $10,000 for a year's worth of work. And now, out of this one small space, we produce all this revenue for the library.
Isn't that terrific? How much does that happen around the country, Jim?
Oh, it's not at all uncommon. My home public library, the Williamsburg Regional Public Library in Virginia, has a rolling book sale that's staffed by volunteers, and it's very successful. And I contribute to it, too.
Now, I donate, and my husband donates books. We've just moved from a home to an apartment, so we had to narrow down our selection of books. We donated a great deal to the public library. Would those books sort of automatically be sold, or would they be put on the shelves?
They are most often sold, and we do it very commonly with a number of friends groups throughout the District of Columbia Public Library.
That's great.
You know, the cost of a book is more than the physical book. It's also the cost of the cataloging and the plastic jacket and all the rest of it. And usually adding a single copy of a book, or even an additional copy of a title you already own, costs about as much as to buy the book, especially with the library's discount. For that reason, we don't often add the book to the collection, but boy, is it a wonderful service to sell it in the increases the number of book owners in the community, and that's good for all of us.
How many times a year does the district have book sales of that sort?
Each Friends group makes their own decision for what works in their community. Mm-hmm. Some have an ongoing sale. There's a shelf or an area in the library where it's sold. In some cases, they do two or three sales a year, in some cases, one a year. Some are very, very successful, and it is that incredible work of volunteers that makes it possible.
How about Baltimore, Carla?
In Baltimore, we have sections called Browse and Buy, and so at all times of the year you can do that. And then we have a great big book sale right the first week in December, and people just flock in, and this year was one of our best book sales ever.
That's great. Here's a final email from Susan in Vermont. She says, my sister lives in Montpelier, Vermont. Just last week, she told me about a quote that hangs over some tiny library in rural Vermont. And here it is. Libraries will get you through times of no money better than money will get you through times of no libraries.
We're all smiling because the American Library Association has made bookmarks out of that saying.
Carla Hayden of Baltimore, Jenny Cooper of the district, and Jim Reddick, he's president of the American Library Association. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Susan Neighbors. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.